Colossians chapter 3, verses 18 through 21. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. You may be seated.
I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to be with you this morning, and I hope and pray that what we do will please the Lord and will help us. When I was invited to come for this series of three messages, and we discussed the possibility of family emphasis, I knew that there is always the danger that somebody will go away with a deflated, even depressed view of the family and the home because they perhaps do not feel that they figure into this message or that it is for somebody else. It's for those who have the typical nuclear family, and that isn't the case. I hope you'll find something in these messages and in that packet of information that we will not be reading that necessarily, but that you'll find something there that will help you, no matter who you are, what your family circumstances may be at this time, that you would find something of value to you to challenge you and to give you some more information to study and hopefully to sincerely and personally take inventory of where you are, where you want to be, and where the Lord wants you to be, and let Him help you to arrive at a goal that pleases Him and is a good influence on others. The church is the family of God. 1 Timothy 3:15 says that. The household of God, the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth. So the principles we want to look at today have to do with the family as we would recognize it, husband, wife, son, daughter, mother, father, grandparents, so forth, but that we would see ourselves as a part of the family of God to make application of the same principles. The golden rule applies in our families, but it also applies in the family of God. It applies in business. It applies at school. It applies at play everywhere. Now, if you let it become ridiculous, the golden rule may say, rather than win the ball game, you would let the other team win so that they would have a good day. No, you won't play on that team very long if you have a coach who's alert, because that's not for competitive sports when it is overstated. That which teaches too much teaches nothing. But what we want to do in applying the golden rule, even in competitive sports, is to be good sports, to play by the rules, to show sportsmanship, to create an atmosphere of teamwork, and to take all those principles with us to church, to take all those principles with us into our homes, so that in the home setting, we treat the other members of our family the way that we would want to be treated if the roles were reversed and if we're thinking clearly and spiritually about it. It's good for parents from time to time to try to see the things that are being discussed from the mind and the heart of the children. As best we can as parents, we need to try to trade places with them, to understand the pressures that they're under, to understand not only the blessings that they may or may not be thankful for at this point, but to see the struggles that are very real to them, and hopefully to see the blessings and be grateful for them. But it's also good for the children to try to trade places with the parents as best they can. If I were the mommy, here's what I would do. You might or might not, but that's what you think at that time, and it's okay to say it. If I were the daddy, here's what I would have done to handle that situation. Okay? You might or might not, but it's good to be able to think it and say it. Trade places as best you can. I sat where they sat. And then when the time comes that the little ones do become parents, many of them will say, well, it's harder than I thought it was. It's not quite as easy to get it done as I thought it might be. But if we understand the golden rule, Matthew 7:12, in the light of the family relationship, we can take it one step further, or at least one portion of application further, and see Dr. Dennis Waitley's double win. Dennis Waitley is not a theologian. The whole book, The Double Win, doesn't have a verse of Scripture in it that I remember reading. But the principle is of the golden rule at its best. He said there are three groups of people, losers, winners, and double winners. The loser says, there's no way I can win. Defeated before I start. The winner says, I'll do everything I can to win. And that's honorable as far as it goes. But the double winner says, when I help you win, that's when I really win in the game of life. And so if the husband helps the wife be a better wife, find more fulfillment and appreciation in her role at home, she not only wins, he wins too. The children win when the parents get along with each other better. The parents win when the children get along with each other better. It's a shared winning atmosphere. And I know you may say that's utopia. We don't live in a perfect household. I don't either. I didn't grow up in one. I don't have one now. And now that our children have been launched, we still don't have a perfect home. But we do have some understanding in a greater way and some more mature, experienced view of what will work and what won't work. I don't think we in our house are easier on our grandchildren than we were on our children. We just finally figured out that not everything is a federal case. Not everything is earth-shaking. As I read somewhere, one fellow said, this ain't the hill I choose to die on. Not good grammar, but it's got something to think about in it. You can't die on every hill. Not everything is worth severing a relationship over. Now, there are points where we have to draw the line. If it's not going to please God, we can't do it. If God said don't do it, then I don't need to turn around and say it's okay under these circumstances. I can't change the wording of the text. You can't either, honorably. None of us can. But we don't have to draw the line so that anybody who disagrees with me is therefore automatically wrong and inferior and then insincere because I told him. That's harsh judgment that does not deserve to be carried home or to church or to work or to school or to society or anywhere else. When I was umpiring baseball many years ago, after I'd finished my career in baseball, I umpired for a couple of years. I was behind the plate, and I was the last word. I had a rule book in my pocket. I kept it with me at all times, and from time to time, I'd wave it at somebody just to make my point. But I was the last word. If I said that guy was out, he was out. Now, we didn't have instant replay. We didn't have judge and jury cases back then on those things. That was it. I tried very hard to do it right. But there were times that I could see what the people in the stands couldn't see. That's why I was right there on top of it. That's why I got hit a few times. That's why I got tackled a few times. But I wanted to be sure I was seeing it because in that game, at that time, under those circumstances, I was the last word. God is the last word in His Word on the role of husband, wife, son, daughter, mother, father, grandparent, grandchild, all these other relationships in the family. And he is the last word, and he always has been and always will be, and we must please him. But when we come up short, he is forgiving and he is understanding. He is patient. He is compassionate. But he does not tolerate rebellion and defiance, nor should we. So what we're looking for is a golden rule, double win situation that says, I want to help you be successful. And if I can help you be successful in this home setting, everybody in the home will benefit from it. If I am a stick in the mud, boss hog, have to have my way, everybody will suffer because of that immature Hitler attitude. It doesn't work. If you've ever tried it, you know it doesn't work. If you're tempted to try it, skip it. It won't work. It can't work. Therefore, the mind of Christ, the attitude of Jesus is the right attitude. He's the one who taught golden rule, Matthew 7:12. He's the one who taught love God supremely and love neighbor as self, and then defied neighbor as anyone who has need of what you and I can do for those people. Are you a good neighbor to your family members? Do you have compassion on them and truly helpful to them? You and I come into our families as helpless infants. We don't have any decisions to make. We come in totally dependent. And then we grow up and we begin to stretch. And then we begin to assert. And we go through the toddler stage. And then we go on through the other developmental stages. And then we are launched into a world that we weren't ready for, but we thought we were. Sometimes it happens at 18. I don't know about you, but I should not have gone to college at 18. I should not have gone to college at 18. I was not ready. I was glad to get out of high school. I didn't have a good high school experience. It was my own fault, largely, but I didn't have a good experience in high school. I wanted to get out from under those rules. And so, of all things, I went to Fried Hardeman that had 10 times more rules than my high school did. I didn't know that you couldn't go downtown during the day with a girl. You could at night. But you couldn't during the day. I never understood. To this day, I don't understand that rule. I understand something about the need for the college not to have bad influence in the community and so forth. I understand all that. But finally, I got to be on the board down there, and I said, why was that ever? It's not a rule now, but why was it a rule then? Same rule that says if your hair reaches your ears, you can't register. You can't be a student here if your hair's long enough to reach your ears. I didn't quite understand that. You couldn't have a mustache. If you were Caucasian, you couldn't have a mustache. If you were American, Caucasian, you couldn't have a mustache. But if you were African American, even as an American, or if you were from another country, you could have a mustache or a beard. I couldn't understand the reasoning for that. So I got on the student council so I could get that resolved. I stayed on the student council for 1 year, didn't get it resolved. But see, I wasn't in charge. Nor should I have been in charge. But if I had waited 2 years, if I had gone ahead and served in the military for 2 years and then started school with a degree of maturity and experience and all the things that go with that, I would have done much better. Are you always mature at 18? No. Are you always mature at 38? No. Are you always mature and wise at 70? No. But the likelihood is that in the normal processes of things, these things will be better as it goes. The issue here is sincere love for God, desire to follow His teachings, love for the will of God to be done in your life, and following Jesus as your perfect example, though you and I can't follow Him perfectly. But we come into our families based on what we've received so far. And so if you've seen your dad operate as a devoted child of God, you're likely to come into the marriage relationship by listening and looking to that example. But if you didn't see that, you have to learn it somewhere else. It's still the right way to do it. If you saw your mother mistreated at home, and it's possible that you, as a young man going into a marriage, will think that women should be mistreated, but they should not. Nobody should be mistreated, male or female, young or old. It is never right. Why? It violates the golden rule. It violates the very standard by which we claim to be leading ourselves in this world, and that is the Bible and its own teachings. It's never right to mistreat somebody else. Ever. Therefore, you come into a marriage with whatever baggage and whatever blessings you bring to it from your family of origin. I performed a wedding ceremony a while back for a young man whose mother and father had separated and divorced. Each had remarried, and so he had step-parents on both sides. He had step-brothers and sisters, and then he had a half-brother. And so when I was meeting with him and his fiancée before the wedding, I said, "You realize that you bring from your home setting all the things that have been put into your mind?" And he laughed, and he said, "I hope not." I said, "Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's where you're coming from. Doesn't mean you're going to duplicate them. It could mean you've seen what doesn't work and you're stronger now and will have a better family relationship. But be sure of this, it does influence you. It just does." And so from the family of origin, we come into a new family developing. How does that work? If we remember the golden rule, and we remember the double win concept, it will work much better when founded upon Scripture and founded upon balanced Bible teaching and application. And so the personality that you bring into it, you're dating for whatever period of time. Do you realize that the way that young man treats you on the date is going to give you an indicator as to how he's going to treat you if you marry him? You say, "Well, he's misbehaving really bad, but I've taken him on as a project, and I just know that I can make something out of him." Very few times is that successful. "Yes, I know he beats me now, but he won't after we get married. Statistics won't bear that out." But at the same time, is he worth salvaging? I don't know. I like to think everybody is. But don't marry a project. Marry somebody in whom you have confidence, who's trying to follow the teachings of Jesus as you're trying to follow the teachings of Jesus. If she lies to her mother while she's dating you, why won't she lie to you after she marries you? After all, she lies to family. Can you learn something from people's conduct during the dating period? Again, it isn't all negative. It can be wonderfully positive. He shows his mother respect. He remembers her birthday. He remembers his parents' anniversary. He loves his mother and father enough to respect them and to honor them. That ought to register with you as you're dating him. This guy thinks family is important. But even if that isn't who he is and isn't what he's been doing, can he learn? I love to think that we can learn, we can improve. I've made many mistakes that I knew better, I just didn't try hard enough. But I can learn. And I'm thankful my wife has never given up on me. She's been frustrated lots of times, but she's never given up on me. And I'm thankful for that. I'm very thankful. But there comes a time when I can't say, "I didn't know." I do know now. There's a time when we can say, "I realize that I'm weak." Well, I don't have the right to be weak on a continuing basis if I can be strengthened. I need to be assertive without becoming aggressive and challenge myself to greater heights for improvement personally and spiritually. And then that will carry over into my home. So my personality, my traits, the things that make me who I am are going to carry into that marriage relationship. Now, as we continue to see those things, we're going to see conflict resolution and communication as two of the biggest things that happen. Communication has to do with presenting a message and involving somebody listening. If you don't have listening, why do you have a message? But you have a cycle of communication. At the top, message, sender, receiver, feedback. Message, sender, receiver, feedback. Message, sender, receiver, feedback. We do it all day, every day, even if we don't define the terms. And so within a dating relationship, in a marriage relationship, in a parent-child relationship, and in church relationship, we have a message, we have a sender, we have a receiver, we have feedback. Are you listening when someone is talking? Are you listening when there's a discussion going on in the home? Or are you planning your next response and reaction to see if you can win? If you win at somebody's loss, you didn't win. If you help the other person win and you do not sacrifice your principles by doing that, you could both win. That's called the double win. It's as biblical as baptism, and it's as practical as it can become for golden rule treatment within a family relationship. And then when conflict does come, it doesn't always have to be an ugly scene. But in conflict resolution, and you'll find the seven steps to efficient to a good clean fight. I love the Dr. Charlie Shedd book called Letters to Karen. I used to require everybody to read that before I do the wedding ceremony. I don't do that anymore, but I should. It's a valuable little book. But what you do with that is to understand in chapter 8, eyeball to eyeball, when there is a time of disagreement that is major, it needs to be addressed. Don't ignore it. Don't condone wrong. But be honest and open and compassionate in trying to resolve conflict. Listen to the other person. Listen with your third ear. That is your heart. Listen compassionately to the other person, whatever he or she has to say. Try to swap places and see it from that person's point of view. Golden rule, double win. And keep doing that as long as you live. As you look at more things, financial management, it's one of the biggest problems that couples face today. When you have a hoarder who marries a spender, you're going to have some kind of communication there. It's going to be tough. I'm afraid I know some people who have $100 in their checking account. They owe $300, but they decide to buy a boat. We really need to be fiscally manageable and responsible. Stewardship is a Bible doctrine. And any marriage counselor will tell you that one of the biggest problems that he or she listens to and tries to help people with has to do with financial management. If it has to do with moral choices, sexuality, another issue in marriage. If you promise before God that you're going to be faithful to this person as long as you both shall live, what on earth is there that should keep you from doing that? Oh, but this person at work told me I was cute. My wife never tells me I'm cute. This person at work tells me I'm strong. My wife doesn't tell me I'm strong. This person at work told me that I was fun to be with. My wife doesn't tell me I'm fun to be with. You might need to change jobs. It might be that that would solve a problem. But if that person at work is telling you how cute you are, and that person at work is telling you how clever you are, and how much fun you are to be with, knowing that you're married, that ought to wave a flag of caution so fast and so strong in your face that you would terminate that kind of communication before it went any further. It needs to be understood that flirting is flirting and flirting is wrong when you're married. Compliment, sure. Kindness, sure. But there's a line, and don't tell me you can't tell when it's crossed. There's a line that does not need to be crossed. And if a person knows you're married and still wants to cross that line with you, you are not being paid a compliment. What if you go ahead with it? What if it becomes something far more than it was starting out to be? And you decide to leave your wife and marry that person. What have you married? Can you trust her out of your sight? Could it be that she conquered the one that she was after and now she goes to conquer even better things? We need to learn from experience so that we do not make foolish mistakes and then pay for them for the rest of our lives, even monetarily, but spiritually especially. Be faithful to your marriage vows. And don't let anybody or anything keep you from being faithful to your marriage vows. And see to it that you encourage your spouse to do the same. Read 1 Corinthians 7. It'll help a lot. It'll help a great deal. What are you going to do with leisure activities? Everybody needs a rest. Mark chapter 6, verse 31, Jesus said he needed a rest. Come over here and let's rest a while. Nothing wrong with that. It becomes wrong when it becomes the God. When it becomes such a financial investment and such an emotional investment that you can't even work, can't even see your family for playing. Be sure that that communication process is not interrupted by an excessive amount of emphasis on leisure and recreation. Be sure that it is not interrupted by an excessive amount of interest in technology. Sitting with people you claim to love and looking at a rectangle and doing nothing but that with poor communication, if any communication, can be a tremendous detriment to open, honest communication that builds intimacy and builds relationship. And then, what about your friends? What about the influences that are exerted upon you? I want to close with this thought, and I hope it's something that you will appreciate and that you will benefit from. The influences that are exerted upon you in your family relationship can be and should be tremendously important. It was 30 years ago that I read this story, and I wish I could find it. I know I didn't throw it away intentionally. I do not know how to find the story. But as I remember the story, there was a man in California who had a 15-year-old daughter whom he loved very much. At that time, I had a 15-year-old daughter whom I loved very much. She's 45 almost now, and I still love her very much. Well, when I read the story, this man was not, he was a church member, but not active, not involved, not faithful by his own standards and by the standards of God. She was an active church member, involved in the youth program and doing well and really, really enjoying life in Christ. She tried to encourage her dad to go with her and to be more involved, and he said he would at some point, but he was busy right now. But one night she was with the youth group and there was a wreck and she was injured, critically injured. He was raising her by himself. Don't know the story there. But he loved her very much, although he didn't direct it in the right way spiritually. She's in the hospital and everybody from church is there to show support to her and to encourage him. He appreciated the love and support, but she was very critical. He assessed his own spiritual needs and he knew intellectually and now he knows more emotionally that he hasn't been living right and he knows it and he's sorry and he's determined that he's going to live right. And so about 2 weeks into that, the people have gone home. He's in the waiting room at the intensive care unit. About 2 o'clock in the morning, he said, I got down on my knees beside one of those uncomfortable chairs. And he said, I just prayed my heart out to God. And I said, oh God, please, please, please let my little girl get well. Restore her health. Bless her to live a long time and be active and faithful in your kingdom. If you will do that for me, if you will do that, I promise you I will be faithful to you the rest of my life. But if she dies, I promise you I'll be faithful to you the rest of my life regardless. And with that prayer, she died. And he's writing about it later. He said, "Do you think there is one iota of interest in my heart to turn my back on that pledge I made?" He said, "I will spend the rest of my days on this earth praising God and pleasing God and honoring God, partly because the only way I will ever see my little girl again is to go where she is, because she cannot come where I am. I'm so sorry for my unfaithfulness, but I can't unscramble eggs. I can't go backward. All I can do is go forward." Influence of a 15-year-old on the heart of her daddy brought him back to Christ. Let any good influence at home or anywhere else bring you to Christ or bring you back to Christ, and the power of influence is great. But come to Christ because it's the right thing to do, even if there are negative influences being exerted in your life. Be faithful regardless. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego says, "King, we are not going to bow down to your image." Read it in Daniel 3. "Our God will deliver us if you put us in the fiery furnace. But even if he doesn't, we're still not going to bow down." In other words, faithful regardless. Faithful regardless. And you have the power and I have the power to make that commitment or to remake that commitment even today. Repentance and baptism for those who've never come that route. Restoration of fellowship for those who've had it severed. The seeking of prayers by people who love you and people who will help you and people who will forgive you and people who will not gossip about you, but people who will affirm that relationship. We stand ready to help. Will you come while we stand and sing?